out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have cracked. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. I have no idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the Imola Grand Prix and another good race weekend, another bit of drama and another example of how these tracks they don't go too often cause all sorts of excitement during the races. And of course, the big story of the weekend is Mercedes have clinched the Constructors' World title now. So that's seven in a row, seven consecutive world titles, which is the most ever, beating Ferrari. Obviously not the most titles ever, but the most consecutive titles ever. I think Ferrari have, they got 16 world titles, I think, total.
Yeah, they're definitely up there somewhere. Yeah. Williams have got nine, I think. McLaren have got eight, I think. And so they're well up there now, well on the way to beating McLaren and Williams' record as well.
Yeah, and of course, next race, I think Hamilton can win the title. I think Bottas needs to outscore Hamilton by 11 points to stay in it or something like that.
So 8 points, I think.
Is it eight now?
I think so.
It's already very, very, it's a tough hill to climb, isn't it, for Bottas to even stay in the race this weekend. But, incredible stuff. And you got to look at Mercedes. They've got to go down as one of the greatest constructors of all time after the run they've had, you know. It surprised me actually when I saw the list and I saw that McLaren were on it, obviously, and Williams, you know, Williams are so far up there. They had such an incredible 70s and 80s and some of the 90s as well. You know, Williams are right up there in the all-time record. But, you know, Mercedes, they've just been absolutely unstoppable in this era, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think when you talk about the Mercedes as a team, I think it's that team of people that have achieved the seven consecutive titles. So that togetherness, because they really don't have that many personnel changes within Mercedes. Certainly in the back, in the factory, and the support staff that go with the team. So I think that group of people that have been together for 8-9 years probably will be regarded as the best overall team of all time, because the stuff they've achieved is amazing. You look at the forums, the Formula One forums, which I try not to look at these days because it's so full of bitterness. You know, people making comments on Hamilton wouldn't win if he was in any other car, and we can't wait till he retires. And they're just bitter, some of these fans. So if you look at that, they say, well, it's, you know, it's just because they've got a great engine. But it's not. It's a whole teamwork thing, isn't it? It's the setup of the cars, the building of the chassis. It's the aerodynamics. It's the engines, obviously. But it's the drivers. It's the whole package that they bring along to each race weekend.
Yeah, and we've said it before on this that, you know, they'll make a mistake. Something will happen in a Grand Prix. They'll make a mistake. It won't be blamed on any one person, but they'll go, right, okay, we made that mistake because of this and because of that person or because of this situation. Let's not let that happen again. Let's learn from it. Let's change some stuff. And, you know, every time the car comes out and they're like, oh, Mercedes might be having a wobble this weekend, within 4 or 5 days, they've sorted whatever that issue is out and they're great again in the next Grand Prix. And, you know, the teamwork, just the personnel, like you say, just the whole package is just incredible, and they don't really blame anybody. You know, Ferrari's a good example where something will go wrong and they'll go, oh, that was Dave's fault on the tires, you know, he shouldn't have done that, and they kind of name people and blame people, and that gives a very negative atmosphere in the team, doesn't it? Whereas Mercedes won't do that. You know, Toto's like, we win together, we lose together. Hamilton says the same, you know, and they are very together as a team, and there's no blame game. There's none of that. And, you know, it's great. They deserve the success. Some say it's been boring, but you could argue, you know, Ferrari did this in the early 2000s. Obviously, Red Bull did it between 10 and 14 as well. And, you know, we have these eras, don't we, of these teams. And I'd be surprised if Mercedes are this good and this on top when we change all the rules for 2022. But you never know, do you? I mean, they've obviously got a great head start. It's an incredible engine, and they've just got the entire package absolutely bob on, and seven world titles in a row proves it.
It really does, and Ferrari is a perfect example. I can't wait to see what Sebastian Vettel says. I think a book is probably necessary when he leaves Ferrari, because at the moment he's keeping his head down and being really quite professional, not talking about them or dissing them as much as he probably should be. But Ferrari's relationship with him is just unbelievable. I mean, I saw a great photograph in the paddock at Imola where they had Leclerc walking almost hand in hand with Binotto through the paddock and Vettel. In the background, just looking dejected, walking completely on his own where the rest of the team was surrounding Leclerc. And then during the race at Imola, I mean, this is either sheer incompetence, which I'm sure that Ferrari is capable of on many occasions, or this is complete disrespect for Seb when he radios to say, I've got front wing damage, and the radio call back to him, this is during the race, is TV looks okay, data looks okay, no problem. And in the end, we find out that it's an entire wing end plate of Vettel's that's gone in his spin during the opening laps, which embedded itself in Bottas's car. Not only could they not be bothered to look at the data properly, which would have told them, I'm sure, but they couldn't even be bothered to look at the car itself as it was going round the circuit to realise it was missing a major piece of bodywork. And they weren't even watching the TV monitors when Vettel was concerned either. It was like, we don't care. He doesn't exist. Let's just focus entirely on Charles Leclerc, and that's all we're interested in.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? Because I think you see the measure of a person when they're down on their luck and they're in a bad, you know, time. And I think Vettel has just carried himself brilliantly through this. I was always a Vettel fan. I love his sense of humour. But I just think he's been, like you say, ultra professional. He's not slagged them off. He's not done anything. But Ferrari have got a bit of a history of, you know, they fell out with Alonso towards the end, didn't they? And I remember when that happened, I remember thinking, I get the impression Alonso's very hard to work with. And I get the impression he wants the best out of everybody. And he's constantly pushing. And, you know, he's not there to make friends. He's there to win world titles and become, you know, a megastar. And I think Ferrari, they just tend to throw their toys out the pram a little bit. They tend to fall out with their drivers. And once they've fallen out with them, it's game over. There's no recovering from that. And, you know, they don't seem to be doing the same professionalism that Vettel is, for example. I mean, Vettel's obviously happy because he's got his deal to go to Aston Martin for next year. So he's kind of sorted for his future and stuff, which will give him some content. And he's a four-time world champion. He's obviously got more money than he ever needs. So there's a lot of content in his life, I imagine. He's got his wife and his kids now. But at the same time, like you say, he's been ultra professional. He could be very bitchy. He could be saying some horrible stuff about Ferrari and the people within the team, but he's not. He's just cracking on, keeping his head down. And yeah, it's very bizarre the way Ferrari sort of, like you say, completely disregard someone when they've, it's almost like, well, we're done with that toy now. So we need the next toy now. We're done with that one. So it's a shame, isn't it, really?
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Yeah, please follow us on Twitter and retweet our tweets when we release the podcast each week. That would be most helpful. The Grand Prix itself, Imola, what a circuit. I mean, I said this in last week's podcast. It's one of my favourites. You look at it from the aerial shots in the helicopter, and you just see how it's set in that beautiful landscape with a forest and fields, and it just looks amazing. And then you see the onboard shots from the cars, and it just looks like the most fun circuit for those drivers to drive. All right, it didn't have that much overtaking, which Hamilton warned might happen on Saturday after qualifying. It did have some juicy moments, though, and it just looks like a fabulous track to drive.
Yeah, I think the one thing that stood out for me as well was the fact that the houses are just like over the wall.
Yeah.
So there'll be a wall and then there's like two or three houses and people just stood on their balconies watching the race from their house and stuff. Like, you know, to have a house that close to a race circuit is absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? But you're right, you know, the scenery's great. It looked like a great little track. And it's a shame that we don't, you know, obviously we've not raced there virtually at all since the 90s. And it's just a shame that these tracks don't kind of make more of a bigger appearance in the F1 calendar, because I think some of the tracks that we go to now are very sterile, aren't they? And they're built for, it's like the equivalent, I always think it's like an airport. You know, you can build an enormous airport with all the amenities and all these different things, and you have to walk miles to get to your plane and all that kind of stuff. They've got all the shops and the restaurants and everything shiny and new and wonderful. But then sometimes you go to a tiny little airport and you're like, well, this is fun, isn't it? Because it's only like a 2-minute walk to the plane and there's a little cafe here and old Bob's serving the tea here and he's all right. He's been here for 25 years and it's just got that different feel to it, hasn't it?
And Scott likes to get on his plane, sit next to the rear gunner, wearing his leather skull cap and his Biggles goggles.
I love a little airport. I think it's character. That's the word I want. And these tracks have got character, haven't they? They've got character. They've got history. They've got, you know, some amazing stuff that have happened over the years at these circuits. And I do think it's a shame if next year they just take them all out of the calendar again.
Yeah, and it looks as though they're going to. And that's I've raised this point this year in the podcast. You know, I think it's fabulous that we've pulled all these circuits out of the bag because of the pandemic and because we needed to race closer to home in Europe because of travelling restrictions and things. But what is a great shame is that the likelihood is we'll have visited these tracks probably for the last time, Imola being one of them. Mugello probably as well, and you know the Turkish Grand Prix unlikely to resurface on the calendar simply because the promoters of those race tracks don't have the budget to compete with the big boys, which is what we'll return to next year. I saw an article from Karun Chanduk, who was talking about Formula One needing more sort of two-day weekends instead of three-day weekends, and having a sprinkling of these old traditional classic circuits in the mix from as early as next year. And I think that would be wonderful if it happens, but I just can't see it.
Yeah, I mean, the only good thing is Ross Brawn's kind of in charge of that now, isn't he? And he's got a racist brain, a team brain, you know, so he might be thinking of these things. And they obviously want to make the spectacle and the entertainment factor as high as they can. So that gives me hope that someone like that's in charge. But yeah, I mean, you can't just lose these circuits. I think when you've given someone a little bit of a, you know, you go, oh, look at this, you know, it's like saying to someone, oh, look at this car over here that you could drive, and then you take it away from them again. It's just bizarre, isn't it, that you show people what is possible and then take that away again. So hopefully they will kind of come up with some kind of hybrid system where they can, like you say, keep a few of these tracks in. I guess it's like the old, when Bernie used to say, what we need is sprinklers at the race. That'll make all the races different if we have sprinklers. It's these little ideas, isn't it? But I mean, this seems more of a sensible idea to me to have these circuits, you know, rather than sprinklers and stuff. But I do think they need to keep the entertainment high. You know, the DRS has always been quite controversial, that it's an artificial overtaking device. And do we need the DRS? Should we have more of it, less of it, and so on and so forth? It's the constant kind of conversation, isn't it, really?
Well, let's talk about the race a little bit then. So Verstappen gets past Hamilton in the opening lap down to the Tamburello of chicane. Then he's chasing Bottas. Bottas, we know, runs over Vettel's damaged car, which Ferrari don't notice. And then Bottas is, you know, I mean, I'm not his biggest fan, but he was definitely hampered by that with a lack of downforce. So eventually he gets caught by Verstappen. Then Verstappen has this amazing tyre blowout, which opens the race wide open. And of course, during all that confusion, when they red flagged the race, put the safety car out, you got the George Russell then spinning off under the safety car, which we've seen Grosjean do in the past. George Russell absolutely gutted. We've got Ocon who retires. He's still having a sort of torrid time in the Renault, where Danny Ric seems to be coming good all of a sudden with a second podium this season. And then if you look at the team standings, obviously Mercedes win the Constructors on 479 points, Red Bull 226, but third, fourth and fifth. So the battle for third place, I mean, it's just massive with, what, four races to go? Renault on 135 points, McLaren on 134, and Racing Point on 134. And would you agree with me that the call they made to bring Perez in for fresh tyres during the safety car probably cost him the podium?
Yeah, he seemed a little bit tetchy, will be the word I'll use, about that post-race as well. I saw an interview and he was kind of questioning that and said, you know, I need to speak to the team. And that, to me, when a driver says, I need to speak to the team, that's their way of saying, I'm really angry about that, but I won't say anything just in case they've got an excuse or a reason. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? Because when you saw the blowout that Verstappen had on his tyre, you know, were they being overly cautious? We've seen this before where they go, oh, you know, we weren't sure if we were going to get a blowout, so we called them in. But like you say, I think it did cost him the podium. It's such an interesting one with Perez, isn't it? Because obviously we've got this driver, the whole driver thing for next year is like backwards almost, where all the lower down teams have kind of confirmed their drivers, and it's all the big meaty seats that we're waiting on. So we're waiting on the second Red Bull seat, obviously. Hamilton still hasn't re-signed for Mercedes. And then you've got Perez on the sidelines, who's lost his drive for next year. You've got Hulkenberg, who's come back and been very strong. You know, you've got all these different drivers, and it's fascinating who is going to end up. And I think the rumours are that the Red Bull seat is either going to be Perez or Hulkenberg. Who would, if it was your decision, who would you go with out of those two? Because I think both have got strengths. I feel like Perez slightly edges it for me, but I don't know if that's just because he's racing permanently, whereas Hulkenberg kind of appears, does the odd race and then goes again. I rate them both very highly. But if it was my call, I don't know. I think I'd just edge towards Perez personally for the Red Bull for next year.
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, don't forget, Hulkenberg's been racing on and off, well, almost permanently for 13 years and never had a podium. Mm. So, I mean, that tells you that he's a good driver, but has never quite made it. Albeit maybe not having the best car underneath him. I think Perez or Hulkenberg would do a decent enough job at Red Bull, because I think they're probably adaptive enough to a new car and a car that's basically set up around Max Verstappen, where Alex Albon, I think, was probably the nail in his coffin when he span on the restart of the Grand Prix at Imola, because no one hit him. He said in the interview afterwards, oh, someone hit me. And he went, no, you spun out. He said, did I? I'm like, oh, that's telling. And I think, you know, that's probably the nail in his coffin, sadly. I'd love to see Albon stay in the sport. Will he put him back into the AlphaTauri? Maybe. I think if he went back there, he'd do a really good job for them alongside Pierre Gasly. But then again, Daniel Kvyat did a great job in the Imola Grand Prix for AlphaTauri as well. So it's a difficult one. The Hamilton thing just blows my mind, though, because you'd think there's no way he wants to just win a seventh world championship and equal Schumacher's record and then walk away. I do think it's all resting on Toto Wolff. I don't think Hamilton wants a new team principal in Mercedes. And I'm not sure whether he's trying to convince Toto to stay on for another season, because Toto plays his cards close to his chest. But the impression I get is that he is weighing up his options. He's thinking about family. He said in the post-race at Imola that, oh, I'll always be part of the team because I own part of the team, which made me think, oh, does that mean he's walking away, but he's going to retain some sort of influence? So I'm thinking the Hamilton thing all hinges on that. And who knows, you know, are we going to get this massive bombshell where Toto Wolff announces he fancies the challenge of running the Aston Martin team, which he's a shareholder in, and he ends up running that team alongside Vettel, and Hamilton moves there with him and they kick Stroll out? Because that could happen. We know that Stroll is supposed to be at Aston Martin next year, but, you know, stranger things have happened in Formula One, and it just makes me think, does Hamilton want the challenge of trying to go for championship number 8 in a different car? We always said it might be the Ferrari, but it could be Aston Martin.
Yeah, and I mean, what a concept to think of Toto Wolff running that team and the drivers being Hamilton and Vettel in equal machinery. It's just an incredibly exciting thought to me, that, isn't it? But you're right, it's very, very bizarre. There's more to it. I think they're talking about bringing in a driver's cap of $30 million a season in the new rules. Now, I've heard some rumours that Hamilton's a little bit unhappy about that because he wants $50 million to re-sign. So is this just him saying, right, okay, I'm going to act like I'm going to retire so that Mercedes give me what I want and I get this, you know, get this new deal. And at the very last minute, he pulls out this new deal. Now, if you do a, say he does a 3-year deal now for $50 million a season, does that cap not apply to him because he signed this contract before the cap comes in? Or does he get $50 million next season, then has to have a cut down to $30 million? You know, how does that work? And is that solely what he's looking at here? Does he want the new challenge? Is it Toto Wolff he's waiting on? And like you say, Toto Wolff, I think he was interviewed by Sky over the weekend, and he said that he's got his eye on someone that he's gonna basically make team principal.
Yeah,
he knows who that person is. He knows how to do it, when to do it. And he said, I'm not giving anything away. I'm not saying if it's going to be now. But he was talking like, I've identified someone. They know about it. I know about it. You know, all I've got to do is make that person team principal and the job's done and I can then move on. And I do get the impression we've got some huge bombshell announcement coming, whether it be from Toto or Hamilton or both of them together. But it doesn't feel right. Hamilton's always signed up by now, hasn't he, when he's stayed with the team. And the fact they signed Bottas quite early doors, you know, says to me that they're not sure Hamilton is going to stay. And it's just, I don't know, I can't. And then the Red Bull thing is, you know, it's all because, like you say, Albon, I can't see him ending up back in the AlphaTauri because there's talk of the new Japanese driver coming through into the AlphaTauri to be with the Honda engine. And Helmut Marko basically confirmed that. He said something about Gasly. We need Gasly in the team because he needs to be a strong leader because we're going to have a young upstart in the team next year. So he was basically saying Albon won't be in the AlphaTauri. I can't see Albon staying in the Red Bull. So where does that leave Albon? Does he leave the sport? It's, you know, there's a couple of huge announcements still to come before the end of the year, I think.
Yeah, there is. I can't help but think the whole Mercedes thing hinges on Toto more than it does on Hamilton. I just think that those two a kind of a partnership, and they follow each other wherever they go. And I think that would hinge on it. You know, if Toto decides to take a step down, does that mean Hamilton takes a year out and then comes back for the new rule changes in 2022 with a new team or with a new project from Toto? I don't know, but it's fascinating stuff. And it's certainly not over yet. When we thought that the driver's market was virtually sorted, there's still a long way to go on that, a long way indeed. Let's get some post-race facts then and some stats from our stat man. This is Nicky at Lights Out. You can follow him on Twitter across the race weekend. Some fascinating information on his blog as well. Here he is, reflecting on the Imola Grand Prix.
Mercedes secure a 7th consecutive title, while AlphaTauri and Alfa Romeo record impressive results. Here are the top stats from the 2020 Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton recorded his 93rd career victory at the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, winning for the 9th time in 2020. This was his 72nd victory with Mercedes, equaling Michael Schumacher's record for most wins with a single constructor. Schumacher won 72 times with Ferrari. Hamilton also extends his record for most circuits at which a driver has won to 29. He's the 15th different driver to have won at Imola. His was the 6th win for a British driver at the circuit, the first since David Coulthard was victorious in the 1998 San Marino Grand Prix. It was a milestone day for Mercedes, who secured their 7th consecutive Constructors' Championship victory, breaking Ferrari's former record of 6 successive titles between 1999 and 2004. Mercedes are the first team to secure a Constructors' Championship at Imola since Williams did so in 1980. As well as winning the championship, Mercedes recorded their 100th victory of the V6 hybrid era and became the 7th team to have scored points in 200 Grand Prix. This weekend also marked the 500th podium for a Mercedes-powered car. They're the 3rd manufacturer to reach the milestone after Ferrari and Ford Cosworth. Daniel Ricciardo finished in 3rd place, becoming the first Australian to finish on the podium at Imola and the first non-Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull driver to record 2 podium finishes in a season since Sergio Perez in 2016. Ricciardo now has 31 podium finishes, equaling his fellow Australian Jack Brabham's career tally of top 3 finishes. Mark Webber is now the only Australian with more podiums than Ricciardo. This was the 3rd consecutive race at Imola in which Renault have finished on the podium. Fernando Alonso finished 1st and 2nd for the team in 2005 and 2006 respectively. There were 2 top 4 finishes for AlphaTauri at Imola. On Saturday, Pierre Gasly recorded the Red Bull Junior team's best qualifying result since the 2008 Italian Grand Prix with 4th on the grid. While on Sunday, Danny Kvyat finished 4th, recording a top 4 finish for the 7th time in his career. Kvyat equaled the best result for his team at Imola in its entire history. Pierluigi Martini finished 4th for Minardi at the 1991 San Marino Grand Prix. And finally, for the 3rd time during their stint as teammates, Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi both scored for Alfa Romeo. It's the first time that Alfa Romeo have finished in the top 10 at Imola since Eddie Cheever finished 7th in 1984. Talking of Cheever, this weekend Giovinazzi became the first driver since him in 1982 to race on home soil 3 times in a single season. Giovinazzi is the 2nd driver to have scored from last on the grid in the last 3 races, while Raikkonen is the 1st driver to score from 18th on the grid at Imola since Elio De Angelis finished 4th in 1980.
Thank you, Nicky. Yeah, you can follow him, as Rick said, across the race weekends at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. Some brilliant blogs and information about all the teams and the drivers. And every week I go onto his Twitter page and every week there's a stat. I'm like, how has he found that out? It's crazy, the knowledge and the stats he has. Follow him at Lights Out on Twitter. So we move on next weekend, which we'll talk about very soon. In fact, we'll talk about next week on the podcast is the Turkish Grand Prix. We've been here before, but obviously we're coming back here again.
Yeah, a good circuit, a really good circuit. The drivers love it. Turn 8 is that incredible sort of quadruple apex left-hander, which just looks great from the onboard footage. You can overtake on this circuit. It's a modern one. It was designed by Hermann Tilke. It's a good circuit that we haven't raced at for many, many years, mainly, again, as we've already spoken about, down to money and stuff like that. It'll be interesting to see how the circuit actually is, because I don't think they do much racing at all on the Turkish circuit. So I don't think it has, its complement of touring cars and other sort of formulas racing on it. So the track will be very, very green, I would imagine, unless they've resurfaced it, which we've already seen this season causes its own set of problems. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good track to go to. The teams will have a certain amount of data, but not much. Pirelli will have very little data on the track as well. So it could be an interesting weekend. I think, are we going to get the driver announcement sewn up in Turkey? Something that the Red Bull driver announcement will be made at the next race weekend, which will be interesting, especially if you're Alex Albon.
Yeah, I'm fascinated because I genuinely, I feel like this is one of these things that I can't see what way it's going to go on all counts. I can't see who's going to end up in the AlphaTauri. I can't see who's going to end up in the Red Bull. You know, obviously we've got a short list, but I can't see what way they're going to go. And the same with Mercedes. Like you say, Toto and Hamilton, it's going to be fascinating how this all pans out. Imagine if Hamilton leaves that seat and all of a sudden, at the very end of the year, you've got people like Perez and Hülkenberg kicking around and you've got a new seat at Mercedes-Benz for next year. I mean, what a seat. You know, and then does Verstappen then exercise a clause in his contract and try and get the Mercedes seat if Hamilton leaves? I mean, there's so many questions that hopefully will be answered in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating. Join us on next week's podcast when we'll preview in full the Turkish Grand Prix. Looking forward to going back there. In the meantime, take care.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.